Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Well, while everyone is falling yet again for their distraction du jour, that of the MAGA hat-wearing kids and the Native American protester, responding like a cat to what they dangle in front of us, all the real moves are going unacknowledged and the divide-and-conquer effort of the false two-party system is in full swing. Now, there is a need, to some degree, to call out their lies. I do so in one part of today's show. But it's the coverage today that only focuses on what they want you to be talking about that I see as the problem. And the program masses just eat it up. And of course, all have an opinion, as they were told they should. And while the truth comes out about what Israel was actually targeting in Syria, and the U.S.-backed regime change effort in Venezuela is in full swing, and with many more important stories that I'll touch on today, the propaganda machine has many genuine independent commentators falling all over themselves to point out what we should already know. The mainstream media lies, misrepresents, and manipulates. This is the modern arm, as I see it, of the distraction efforts. They bait us with specifically placed tabloid stories that are largely irrelevant in hopes that we ignore what's really going on. Or that's my take on it, anyway. So let's see what everyone else is missing today. First, a follow-up that I felt was important to correct that somebody recently sent to me that is indeed a very important follow-up. Now, this is not something I necessarily got wrong per se. Somebody had sent it right before I went live, and I commented on an article that I hadn't really looked into yet, or rather just read the title, which is my fault for not, as always, doing your due diligence. And it was the point about Iran saying that they were going to annihilate Israel off the face of the earth. As I said, it was something somebody mentioned in passing, and I wanted to include it to give you a full picture. But there's an interesting spin on this topic that I thought was incredibly important. Now, before I go further, there's a lot to talk about today. It might be a little bit longer than usual, so please stay tuned. A lot of important stuff to talk about. Here's the article. Iran threatens to, quote, eliminate Israel from the earth, quote, mind you, as tensions escalate over Syria airstrikes. And this was widely reported. I believe Zero Hedge reported it as that in the title. But that's actually not correct. And this is a very interesting point between saying Israel and saying a Zionist regime. Here's what they actually said. It says, quote, the young people in the Air Force are fully ready to and impatient to confront the Zionist regime and eliminate it from the earth. Now, as I think we've roundly pointed out on this show, there is a major difference between saying you want to destroy a country and saying you want to destroy a regime. And point of fact, a Zionist regime. They didn't say we want to destroy Israel off the face of the earth. They said they wanted to eliminate the Zionist regime from the face of the earth. Now, that is very important. Now, also, again, recognize that this is the epitome of fake news when they literally quote what they didn't say. Eliminate Israel from the earth. Now, even if some people may just actually have taken that as they're referring to Israel, you cannot put it in quotes if that's not what they said. This is basic stuff, but they know this. They know this. And they're doing it intentionally to conflate the concept of whether you're talking about Judaism or whether you're talking about the Zionist regime and talking about Israel. They want to lump it all in together because criticizing the actions of a government is very different than all the other things they try to make it out to be. And that's something I wanted to cover quickly to point out, because they really, really don't want to talk about the Zionist regime, because we're half our government is Zionist Christians. I shouldn't say half, but a lot of them are. Most of them are dual citizenship, which is also alarming. But this is important to see how they try to misrepresent what's really going on. And I really wanted to point that out, because I actually said this in passing, and I wanted to correct the record. Now, that is a big difference, as far as I'm concerned. Now, another story, and really the first story of the day, kind of another follow-up that leads into the first story of the day, coming from South Front. Additional details and analysis of Israeli attack on Syrian Pantsir S air system, I think it's S-1 air system, and videos they show. Now, this was shared with me by a few people before, and this is actually something I caught yesterday that I really wanted to throw out there for a couple different reasons. Now, the Israelis themselves put out this video, and which actually appears, by all accounts, to be a manipulation, which is actually different clips spliced together meant to give the incorrect perception that the Israeli forces were capable of hitting their active defense systems. while they were active, is the point, claiming that they successfully targeted a Syrian Pantsir defense system, claiming that it was not able to repel the attack, when in reality, the Pantsir S-1 system was targeted when it was inactive. They show all this in the article, in regards to, you can see in the picture that the radar system is down, that you can see the reloading truck coming up. Not that that's really the important point, but it shows you Israel's trying to misrepresent this, maybe just to sell more arms. And say, look at this, our system can even attack the Pantsir S-1, when in reality, it really couldn't. But that is not what caught my eye. Classic Israeli manipulation, as they do all the time, in regard to Iran, usually. But this video to me, or rather just their statement around the video, seems to show pretty damn clearly that despite all their claims of targeting Iran in Syria, that they were actually targeting Syria in Syria and using fake videos to gloat about it. I don't know if that shows you their incompetence and not realizing they were stumbling over their own lie, but the reality is they continue to push forward that we were targeting Iran, the Quds forces in Iran, right? That's it. We were and if something, you know, Syria wasn't part of it, even though we know that they've targeted Syria countless times. And of course, in related story, which goes right into this, coming from anti-media, Israel destroyed 8 Syrian military targets, killed at least 11 troops, which just kind of continues this same story, the reality that they were in fact targeting Syria, which regardless, by the way, of whether it was Iran or Syria, it's still a crime. The example I continue to give is that saying like Mexico were fighting insurgents that somehow found their way into Texas and the U.S. didn't seem to care about it. If Mexico then attacked Texas, it would not be okay. Do you really think that the U.S. would be okay with that? There's no difference here. The only difference is that many people have been brainwashed into thinking that Iran is simply the bad guy, so the rules don't apply apparently. And that's just simply ridiculous. Regardless, we can now see that there are also attacking Syrian targets, which is also a crime. Now, despite claiming that their recent airstrikes against Syria, as I said, were exclusively targeting Iran's Quds forces, Israeli airstrikes, and I might be mispronouncing that, by the way, no one's corrected me so far, but Quds forces, Israeli airstrikes against Syria appear to have almost exclusively, as this reports, hit Syrian military targets, particularly the nation's air defense around Damascus Airport, which many would argue in its own right is not a military target, and that's also a war crime. But, you know, there's far too many war crimes committed by Israel today to point out all of them, kind of being facetious. But the reality is that it was Syrian targets they were hitting. Now, Israeli strikes destroyed 8 Syrian air defense batteries. Mind you that they've put out a video admitting to, in addition to that, and killed at least 11 troops in the strikes. Syrian troops. Now, the batteries were mostly aging Soviet designs, the sort Syria has traditionally favored for targeting incoming Israeli missiles. Now, the Syrian systems had some success, too, as we pointed out, with Russia reporting that the Syrians had successfully intercepted more than 30 Israeli missiles during the attack. Now, as the article points out, conspicuously absent from the engagement were the Russian S-300 systems recently provided to Israel, which is a point that many people have been bringing up, and rightly so. It's interesting. Now, a highly advanced air defense system designed to control a much longer range, the S-300s have so far not been deployed in these Israeli attacks. Now, analysts say that Syria's priority is intercepting missiles and not engaging in attacking warplanes. They didn't give a logic for why that is, but that does explain why they weren't using it, which apparently these systems they have, the S-300s would clearly be a vast improvement over the older systems in regard to targeting the missiles, which they're claiming is their focus. Now, this is their statement, by the way. Now, who knows if that's the reality? Because additionally, Russia also claimed today, interestingly, that Syrian S-300 crews are still not ready to operate the S-300 air defense systems themselves, saying that the S-300 crews have not passed firing exams yet. But somehow that doesn't ring true for me, just because I doubt they would say, oh, well, we couldn't defend ourselves because they haven't passed their tests yet. To me, that just doesn't seem right. But either way, as I said the other day, I think it's clear that they're withholding them for very clear reasons, whether it's to keep their location secret or just to save their money because they are expensive. Either way, they've pretty roundly successfully stopped most of the missiles. But, and by the way, also retaliating against Israel, which they claimed they would. So shooting down the planes would also be great because they're violating the airspace, they're committing war crimes, they should be shot down. But it would be used as an escalation, I guarantee you, to claim, oh, the life of the Israeli pilot in the plane, it would be used to get the U.S. more involved. Maybe that's why. But who can ultimately say? Now, as Israel continues to escalate strikes in Syria, and they've openly said they're going to continue to do so, and it's clearly going after Syrian military targets, no matter what they claim about Iran, this may ultimately convince Syria that they have to engage in Israeli warplanes just to achieve some deterrent from constant Israeli attacks. And maybe Israel's just trying to suss out where the S-300s are. However, right on cue, and I again, including all points of the story, right on cue, as usual, the pro-occupation Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, you know, the one man working out of a t-shirt shop in the UK who somehow knows all about Syria, is claiming that the death toll from Israel's latest bombardment of the military targets in Syria, after all this came out, rose from 11 to 21, adding that most of those killed were Iranian, which may in fact be true, again, but it's funny, the timing of it all, coming from an extremely pro-occupation source that jumps from the 11 reported to 21, and it turns out most of them are Iranian. Again, regardless, Israel has no right to be attacking to Iran. There's no justification for it other than Iran is the bad guy, and we can't let them do things they're allowed to do in another country, which is ridiculous. If anybody was being intellectually honest with themselves, that is a ridiculous thing to claim. Bad guy or not, they're allowed to be there. But this story seems suspect to me. That's my opinion. And I wanted to include it, though, so you know the full story. Now, speaking of propaganda and falsehoods, this next story is riddled with both. And it's something I've been covering for quite a long time in regard to Venezuela. And I have to say, we saw this coming, and we've been claiming that this is what they're building towards. And I'm not psychic. They're openly talking about it, and the media is just not covering it. And that's why most people aren't aware of it. This coming from Zero Hedge. Overnight clashes follow Venezuelan officers' failed attempt to lead anti-Maduro coup. And this all happened in the last 36 to 48 hours. There has been an attempted coup in Venezuela, and it gets more interesting from there. But first, let's go over what happened here. So as the article begins, Venezuela's U.S.-backed opposition leaders are openly calling for a military coup, and a small group of National Guardsmen, a small group, tried and failed on Monday to pull one off. Now, in the pre-dawn hours of Monday morning, a small group of soldiers attempted to launch a military coup against the Maduro government, but failed, resulting in the arrest of 25 members of the Venezuelan National Guard and the apprehension of two others at another location, in total 27 detained, all of which sparked riots in the local neighborhoods, some of which appeared to have continued throughout the night. Now, we cannot ignore first of all, I guarantee that there are genuine people out there that really don't like Maduro that are part of the protest. But without fail, I guarantee you, based on the history and based on what we've already seen happening in Venezuela, based on the comments of Pompeo, of Bolton, the aggressive regime, pro-regime change comments, that there are U.S. forces, proxies or otherwise, on the ground fomenting unrest. That is what they do. Historically speaking, that is an entirely accurate statement. They have done this countless times. They recently tried to do it again in Iran, which they shut down. They recently tried to do it again in Nicaragua, which they shut down. This is nothing new. And they deny it, which is ludicrous because it's easy to prove. But these riots, I could almost guarantee, were at the very least being nudged forward by people on the side of the U.S. Now, Venezuela is currently suffering from what's being widely described as, quote, inflation approaching 2,000,000%. And of course, I'm sure that has nothing to do with the aggressive economic sanctions by the U.S. Nothing, I'm sure. And of course, a shortage of everything from food to medicine and diapers and baby formula, which, again, I'm sure has nothing to do with the collusion between the corporation, the corporate scene in Venezuela and the United States government. I'm sure nothing. All the things that Abby Martin has covered countless times, the very clear connections and how they're intentionally doing so to make it a scene this way. Easy to research. Now, opposition leaders are now calling for the mass protests in the coming days in the wake of the defeated attempt at triggering a broader military revolt, an open military revolt. Now, again, I'm never claiming that Maduro or Venezuela itself, the current government, are good people or bastions of freedom and liberty. Never. We are simply discussing the facts and the lies being told by one side in order to execute an illegal regime change, a coup taking place. People always want to jump to conclusions and say, because I'm not buying the U.S. lies, that automatically means that I think that Venezuela is this amazing country so much better than every... No, I've never said that. And quite frankly, I think socialism is ridiculous. But you know me, I think most governments are ridiculous. But lies are lies and facts are facts. And at the end of the day, they are clearly behind this and making this happen, including their economic downturn, which may partially have to do with their government, but guarantee you it has to do with the economic sanctions because that's what they're designed to do. It's very simple stuff. Now, specifically, opposition leaders in the legislature have called for nationwide protests to be held Wednesday following the Supreme Court declaring it would throw out recent measures by the National Assembly, which we recently talked about, the illegitimate National Assembly that they try to pretend by not informing you of all the information that that's just the government, but it's not, measures by the National Assembly that declared Maduro's president illegitimate. But thus far, have the brief military uprising appears to have been very isolated, even as the officers involved are apparently low ranking with little sway to start a domino effect of defections. And that's not how they're representing it elsewhere, mind you. So it's basically ineffectual middlemen that really have no pull, likely being used by other powers. Now, they, as they say, which would have to dent the higher ranks first. Again, I don't see that happening. And it's clearly something they're misrepresenting in the mass media. Now, the televised government statement following the arrest emphasized that the military remains loyal to the state with the words, quote, "the armed forces categorically reject this type of action." Now, just because the military is on Maduro's side doesn't make it legitimate. What everything else we've gone over in the past years have is what makes it legitimate. The hundreds of international monitors that monitored the election and said it was legitimate makes it legitimate. Jimmy Carter himself saying it's the most legitimate election he's ever seen makes it legitimate. But even all that doesn't prove that all could be a manipulation. But at the end of the day, we have to go off what we're looking at. And I can prove to you that most of what the U.S. says about this is absolute lies because they have an agenda to overthrow the government. They have for a very long time. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with the massive gold reserves in the country or the massive oil reserves in the country. Sure, nothing. Now, as if that weren't enough, the Venezuelan foreign minister, Arreaza, just days ago spoke on record stating that, quote, "nothing that the opposition does is without the permission or authorization of the U.S. State Department." Pretty damning statement. And as if to make that point right on cue as well, as they seem to be right on cue lately, this coming from Zero Hedge as well, following up from today, Pence urges Venezuelans to rise up against dictator Maduro after failed military revolt. That's interesting. They're right on cue, seeming as if they knew that it had failed right away and had jumped right away to keep it going. Interesting, the timing of all of this. Again, I'm being facetious. It's ridiculous to think that they weren't. They have been openly calling for regime change in Venezuela for a long time. Nikki Haley had done it numerous times. Mike Pence has done it numerous times. They openly are talking about using the military in Venezuela. This is not a secret. And yet they still try to pretend like they're backing the legitimate government. It's insulting to people that actually know what to do their research, regardless of what side of the argument you're on. Now, as usual, the White House is frothing at the mouth to stoke the flames of an anti-Maduro unrest following Monday's failed military revolt, launched by 27 low-ranking officers. Now, mind you, that it's all about the fact that Maduro's government does not bend the knee to U.S. interests. They are dropping the dollar. They're basically doing everything that make themselves independent, as a sovereign nation has every right to do. Historically, any country that drops the dollar, that does not put U.S. interest above its own, gets economic pressure and sometimes military pressure from the U.S. government. That is an unequivocal fact. Now, opposition leader Juan Guaido made a broad appeal to the military in a speech, urging them to demand Maduro step down. But as it is now seeming that there's only some middle-ranking people involved, it doesn't seem like it's actually going to take effect. But who knows what the U.S. can do on the ground. Now, Guaido and other opposition leaders in the National Assembly have declared Wednesday a nationwide protest day seeking to topple the regime, which I'm sure is going to be perfectly safe for all the civilians around. Now, this is tomorrow, mind you, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. Now, today, U.S. Vice President Mike Pence urged the Venezuelan people to make your voices heard. That's a quote. In a follow-up to Guaido's risky appeal, which appears a continuation of what we've talked about recently, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's comments throwing the United States full weight behind Venezuela's opposition seeking to depose Nicolas Maduro. Now, Pence's words were issued in a video posted to social media wherein he asserted, quote, "Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power. which I can't even say that without laughing because it's so you could argue that in your opinion, he's illegitimate, but to say he has no legitimate claim to power is to ignore the hundreds of international monitors, what Jimmy Carter said himself, all the other people involved, and all of the people of Venezuela that voted for Nicolas Maduro. When you, it's, I could go on about people that have reached out to me from Venezuela talking about how ridiculous this all is, that the people support him. But, you know, you don't get that from the mainstream media. Now, Pence also praised Guaido. I think it's actually Guaido in Italian, but I don't think that's how it's pronounced in Venezuela, as the, quote, courageous leader of the last vestige of democracy in your country, which is, again, the ridiculousness of the U.S. pretending to be for democracy anywhere should make you laugh out loud. Now, this week, the Supreme Court declared it would throw out recent measures by the National Assembly, the group that's behind all of this, supporting what the U.S. is doing, that declared Maduro's presidency illegitimate. So the Supreme Court itself is not supporting their claims. Now, Pence's video remarks that we just talked about, calling Maduro a dictator and essentially calling for a coup, comes after months of both Trump, his administration, and U.S. congressional leaders becoming increasingly unrestrained in public, calling for outright regime change. And what was that clip again that I, oh, that's right. Let's
watch that. The United States is not looking to do a regime change in Iran. We're not looking to do regime change anywhere.
Funny. Yeah, I guess she meant that. Huh? We don't, no regime change anywhere except for that everyone's calling for regime change. They really think people are that dumb that they can't simply look at what even people are saying in your own government, Nikki Haley. So after Monday's coup attempt, Florida Senator Marco Rubio went so far as to encourage more military defections. And this is something we continue to see from our own government. As he says, under Constitution of Venezuela, Maduro not legitimately elected president, which, by the way, is an outright lie. Complete lie. I mean, that is a complete fabrication. They just claim that the other people won. They're just pushing this story for people that do not know any better. It says when vacancy exists, it's filled by the National Assembly. Again, which is not true, because in 2017, the Constituent Assembly was elected. And this, as I said, the Supreme Court has ruled that this group is no longer legitimate. And it says until next election called. Last night, the National Guard unit pledged it would follow Constitution and regime. Yeah, these 25 low-level mid-groups, these mid-level military people were behind it. See how they present this as something that it seems like one thing, but in reality, it's very, very different. Yeah, that's propaganda. That's what they're best at. Now, as I said before, and I've recently talked about this, the Constituent Assembly was elected in 2017. Good, bad, or otherwise, this is what happened. Now, the National Assembly, which is behind all of this, that the U.S. is supporting, being the primary opposition to Nicolas Maduro, no surprise, not about what's right for the country or what's legal or not. It's about what they are opposed to Nicolas Maduro as a person, and with the Constituent Assembly being his primary supporters. Now, in January 2019, the National Assembly reasserted his authority, declaring Maduro's May 2018 re-election void and declaring Juan Guaido acting president, except for the fact that on the 29th of March, 2017, the Supreme Court stripped the Assembly of its powers, ruling that all powers would be transferred to the Supreme Court. The previous year, the court has found that the Assembly, they found them in contempt for swearing in legislators whose elections had been deemed invalid by the court. Now, corruption can exist anywhere, but again, this all stems from an election that's been widely deemed by the international community to be legit. So all of this stems from that, as if none of this counts because that was illegitimate, which is a lie, at least as we can see by the facts in front of us. So the U.S. is openly backing an illegitimate candidate because it suits their interests. This is classic U.S. foreign policy, as history has repeatedly made clear. They use NGOs or intelligence agencies, as they used to foment unrest. And then, of course, point to that unrest that they caused to justify further sanctions, which further hurt the economy. Then back a dictator that they can control or think they can, even though this is exactly the type of person they pretended to be fighting against. And then they push for a revolution or an invasion, all for U.S. geopolitical interests that have very little, if anything, to do with American interests. U.S. history is rife with undeniable examples of this, with a trail of broken countries in the U.S. wake, left far worse than before the liberation. Yet a new person steps into that White House and Americans act as if everything is new and different. which I don't know how many times we can go through this before we recognize that that doesn't change much. Even if the person really wants to, the system is designed to make sure that one person cannot. Now, the U.S. also always claims to be fighting to protect people from evil dictators. Again, even though that has been shown to be an outright lie throughout history, and yet their current actions are literally putting Venezuelan people at risk by calling for an open, violent revolution in the streets. It takes a lot of effort to not see this for what it is. Now, moving on to another story that I wanted to cover quickly, if possible. The story itself, the headline, it seems like it's not something that I would cover, but there's a reason that I want to talk about this. And this is, it has to do with the truth about what they're really trying to put out. I mean, the Trump administration, as well as the media, in regard to the press conferences with Sarah Sanders Huckabee. And this is coming from Zero Hedge, entitled, "Trump told Sarah Sanders, quote, not to bother with press briefings anymore." Which at first glance, you're like, yeah, these people are liars. They don't, you know, but there's more to this that I wanted to point out in regard. Well, first of all, as it points out, following an earlier tweet where he condemned the mainstream media outlets for bashing a teenager at a Catholic high school in Kentucky who was accused of harassing a Native American activist after video footage of the encounter was taken wildly out of context, which it was, Trump revealed that he told Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, quote, not to bother with press conferences because the unfair and rude media coverage that she receives. Of course, interestingly, here is that story again that I referenced in the beginning of today's show, interestingly being used as the catalyst for this move. So something else to interestingly think about. Now, Trump tweeted, quote, "The reason Sarah Sanders does not go to the podium much anymore is that the press covers her so rudely and inaccurately. In particular, certain members of the press. I told her not to bother. The word gets out anyway. Most will never cover us fairly, and hence the term fake news." Not to mention the kind of the ridiculous idea of saying that, oh, they're mean to me, so I'm not going to do my job. That's one thing. But I agree that the media outlets that they allow into these briefings do not report accurately. That should be obvious to everyone, be it CNN or Fox News, any of the mainstream outlets. They outright lie about things to progress their agenda. But I will offer a different take on this. Might we be looking at a clear example of problem, reaction, solution? With this new step, the American people will simply be less informed on what the government is doing in their name. And that is bad, no matter how you look at it. Yes, the mainstream media are largely liars and manipulators, but if that is the case, why not offer space to independent media who will ask real questions, something Trump pretends to be behind and something none of them actually want? To simply stop giving briefings will likely be cheered on by the right, claiming that they get all they need to know from what Trump tweets. But the fact that they blindly believe what he says shows kind of how dangerous this really is. I feel it is most likely that this was all part of some larger plan to justify less communication with the people, as has been developing for some time in regard to military action, in regard to many things under this administration, which has also been happening long before Trump. Now, whether Trump was a knowing part in this possible deception, is really irrelevant as I see it, as the damage is done. So, Mr. President, I would be happy to come daily, if need be, and ask honest questions that require genuine answers. But somehow, I don't think that is what you really actually want. Now, moving on to another story, and generally the final story of the day, that is something that I've talked about for a very long time, and something that I think we cannot forget about. And we have to recognize how it continues to increase despite all of their rhetoric and feigned actions. It's coming from Zero Hedge. Opioids more likely to kill Americans, excuse me, than car crashes. Now, that's something that many are likely aware of, but many likely still not, which I do find interesting because this is easily one of the most pressing problems that we have domestically that few people are really trying to address. Now, you may argue immediately, no, but I'll explain why I say that. Because all the things you're hearing lately are misrepresentations of the truth. Excuse me. Now, the National Safety Council has reported that Americans are now more likely to die from an opioid overdose than from a car accident. And here's the stats for you to look at. And it's important to kind of go over for yourself what these are. Obviously, heart disease, cancer. By the way, it says 1 in 7 to die from cancer. But reality is that I believe it's about 1 in 2 people today in this country will get cancer at some point in their life, Why that's not the biggest story of the century, I have no idea. All of a sudden, everybody gets cancer. It's just natural, you know, whatever. But no, it's a big deal. And you can see down there, opioid overdose. Right up there above a lot of important things, including car crashes. Now, as Statista's Neil McCarthy notes, I'm not sure what the air, I looked at this under the earlier, but the name is so, it's interesting. N-I-A-L-L McCarthy, it's the group basically that came out with this graphic. As they note, the overall rate of drug overdose, the deaths from that in the U.S. increased by 9.6% between 2016 and 2017, with the death rate from fentanyl skyrocketing 45%. Now that's important. The U.S. had experienced a shocking 70,000 overdose deaths by late 2018. And unsurprisingly, the National Safety Council says that there is an increased risk of dying due to the crisis. You don't say. Now, on a side note, interesting and revealingly absent from this new graphic that was present in the previous editions that I've reported on is that of death by Western medicine, or as I like to put it. But this is an interesting thing to think about for a second. This is not on this list this time around. As it says right there, a recent Johns Hopkins study claims more than 250,000 people in the U.S. die every year from medical errors. Other reports claim the number as high as 440,000. Now recognize we're talking about 70,000 in 1 year, listed as the fifth likely cause of death. It seems like the numbers they're talking about here would likely be probably the leading cause of death today, and maybe that's why they didn't include it. Just a thought. But it's important to recognize that our most expensive and seemingly least functional medical system in this country is one of the leading causes of death in this country. That should be alarming to all of us. Anyway, getting off topic. Now, another point on the topic of the opioid crisis that I felt was important to add, and this is where I'm getting into the misrepresentation. As it's been repeated over and over since Trump's speech about the wall, and I said this on record after I watched the speech, when he talked about the shutdown and immigration, is this false insinuation that all of the drugs causing the problem of the opioid crisis are coming from Mexico. Now, even if they didn't mean to insinuate that, they're all clearly insinuating that, and I've already seen in comments and coverage from people that that's how they're taking it. Very clearly. Even Ann Coulter, I believe, a tweet that, oh yeah, put the wall up, it'll end the whole thing. Not true. Now, this is flat out false, and I'll explain why. But first, here is one of the commentators repeating the same claim in the same fashion. Now, I'm not denigrating her coverage or who she is. I just wanted to point out that this is something that people are repeating.
Joining me now with a reaction to it all, Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Welcome, Charlie. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you heard the discussion between Dan Bongino and Chris Hahn that I always interject myself in, which, whatever. Hahn said
hard
he
had, not to.
Huh? It's very hard not to. But he said, well, the president said today, this is not a concrete structure from sea to sea. And Hansa, well, you know, they should be now with a reaction to it all. Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Welcome, Charlie. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you heard the discussion between Dan Bongino and Chris Hahn that I always interject myself in, which, whatever. Hahn said
hard
he had,
not to.
Huh?
It's hard not to.
Well, I think I'm frustrated. Well, that's okay. That's actually like a 4 minute clip, and I was pretty sure that I edited it, but apparently I didn't. There's a part in there, let's just cut right past it, where she says basically that the United States government is spending $475 billion in Afghanistan, and that we have all this money, but we can't put that money towards a wall, and that 90% of the heroin is coming in from Mexico, and mentions all the deaths dying every week. Now, of course, I really wanted to show you say it just so it made it more important, but I wasn't going to make you watch 4 minutes of that just to get to my point. Clearly, I made a mistake with the editing, but here's the interesting thing. First of all, that in regard to her statements, I'm not sure where she got the stat of 475, but we do know that they're spending $45 billion a year just for the war in Afghanistan. Which I find, I agree with the point she made there, that the absurdity of spending that much money in a country that the U.S. is illegally occupying while quibbling over a fraction of that for the wall. Now, again, the $45 billion a year, but the in regard to her other statement, which is really the point, quoting Trump's numbers from the speech, that in regard to 90% of the heroin. It's important to know that over 60% of the drug overdose deaths are due to opioids, right? This is what they claim, that 90% of the heroin is coming from Mexico and we have to stop it. But 60% of the drug overdoses are coming from opioids. And they keep stating that 90% of the heroin in the U.S. comes from Mexico, which I might even argue with that. But by their stats, that is true, but clearly insinuating that this is 90% of the problem. But here is where they manipulate you. According to the final report by the U.S. Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, a commission that Trump created, mind you, the current epidemic is the result of, quote, excessive prescribing of opioids since 1999. Now, this is something we have to think about in regard to all of this, the lies they continue to put out about this. They're clearly saying excessive prescribing of opioids. Now, according to the CDC, as of 2016, the rate of opioid prescriptions in the U.S. had reached an average of 66.5 per 100 people, or an average of 3.5 prescriptions per patient. In some states, the rates were even higher, such as Alabama and Arkansas, which both had more than 110 prescriptions per 100 people. Just think about that. Now, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2017, opioids were responsible for more than 70,000 deaths. In the context of this statistic, the CDC specifies that this is a combination of prescription opioids, heroin, and synthetic opioid analog fentanyl, which is actually the main part of this. Now, the CDC cites that 40% of the opioid-related deaths involve prescription opioids. 40%. 37% involves heroin. And a study published in May of this year by the Journal of the American Medical Association reports that roughly 46% involved fentanyl. So bottom line, 86% of these deaths are either coming from opioids sold and prescribed by physicians in the U.S. or fentanyl, coming predominantly from China. Now, this is easy to look up. Now, the stats do show clearly that fentanyl mainly originates in China and comes through the southwest border for sure, as well as Canada and the U.S. Postal Service, but the majority of which coming through the mail and Canada, but largely through the mail, the vast majority. In addition, the fentanyl found in the southern border tends to be less potent than the fentanyl shipped through the mail. About 7% coming from the south versus 90% potency coming from the mail. This is according to the DEA's own report. And Trump is most certainly aware of all of this. The truth is that the opioid crisis is due to corporate profiteering at the expense of human life and government malfeasance, knowingly allowing this crisis to get where it is today. So for them to insinuate that the southern border and immigration policy is largely responsible for the opioid crisis, and then state statistics about heroin, which only represents 37% of the problem, is not only wildly and intentionally disingenuous to progress a political agenda and manipulate American voters, it is also allowing the real problem to go unaddressed, as it has for a decade. And I'm sure that they're okay with that. Now, those of you who regularly watch this show know that I criticize both sides of the false two-party system. I point out the idiocy of both extreme left and extreme right. And those who only think in red and blue simply cannot process this. But this is not a partisan argument. This is about the facts and them willfully misrepresenting them. As I always say, it's all political theater. What the mainstream media shows us, what Congress puts forward, what our politicians say, is all meant to keep us within a very narrow field of discussion and debate. It's control. It's long-term, pervasive control of how we think, how we act, how we feel, all while the real agenda pushes on full steam ahead, while we argue about whatever story they drop in front of us. It's time to see the forest through the trees, to question that which they tell us is important, and begin questioning our perspectives and what we may be missing. Thank you for tuning in. I apologize for the clip that I didn't have there. I'm sure you can look it up. I'll have it in the show notes, I believe. Thank you for tuning in as always. Please, if this resonated with you, if this connected with you, if you recognize that we're trying to find the truth, please spread this. Wake people up to what's going on. Wake people up to the reality that we need to begin thinking for ourselves and not blindly following anybody. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.